This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Hugh Wignall is our guest.
Yes.
And Hugh, thank you for coming and spending the afternoon with us here at the Escape Hour, keeping warm in the studio, thinking about a warm and lovely place that you were visiting recently, Mexico.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me too.
No worries. Now, you've done radio before.
I have. There's a bit of history there. My sister and her husband run a small dance music radio station called Kiss
in
Brunswick.
Kidding.
Yeah.
I know Kiss.
I grew up around that.
That's a great radio station.
Totally, yeah.
Hugh, tell us a little bit about why you're in Mexico to start with.
It all sort of centered around a wedding that my girlfriend and I were invited to. And so we kind of thought rather than sort of make that leap across the ocean for 1 or 2 weeks, we'd sort of tack on, you know, 3 or 4 either side of it and sort of spend 7 weeks over Christmas and New Year's sort of running around Mexico.
Oh, how heavenly.
It was heavenly. That is the perfect way to put it. But it was, that was the impetus for going over. And I've never been to that part of Central America before. And my girlfriend had, and she'd done the Caribbean side. But this time we decided to sort of make our way up the Pacific coast of Mexico over sort of 6 weeks.
So Pacific coast is obviously the west coast.
Correct. Yeah.
Now Mexico is astonishingly a very large country.
It's apparently 3 times the size of Texas, I believe.
I was really amazed.
Once included Texas too.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
I think it would be great if it still did include Texas.
Well, solve a lot of problems.
I'm not sure we're going to have this conversation.
No. So where was the wedding held?
The wedding was held in a city, well, sort of more like a beach town called Mazatlan, which was up north. And it's kind of like, if you sort of thought about latitude.
Yeah.
Sort of in line with Baja California, so right up north there.
All right. Yep. I was wondering, so Baja is that spit that comes out, which
yep.
is actually,
yeah.
it looks like it should be Mexico, but in fact it's still California.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's up there. That's
fantastic.
It was an amazing wedding, and we sort of spent probably about sort of 6 or 7 days up there with about sort of 30 Australians that had sort of all come over for it. And
did you know everybody that was going, or is it just a mixture of people?
It was a mixture of people. There was obviously a large Mexican contingent for the bride, because she was she is Mexican. Mm-hmm. And the groom was Australian, so there were a lot of friends who I'd met, a couple I hadn't. So we were all kind of thrown together on this Mexican beach in Mazatlan for sort of 7 days. And as you do, you have a lot of cervezas and a lot of sort of cocktails, and everyone gets to know each other, and then you go off and have this amazing wedding.
There are some beautiful beach parts of Mexico.
Absolutely. And it's become quite a popular place to have a wedding. You know,
A
few Australian celebrities have gone. And
is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I just think of Acapulco. I mean, who couldn't think of Acapulco?
Yeah.
It's just sounds so glamorous.
It is. I've been to Acapulco.
Never been to Acapulco.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's kind of aging now. Like back in the 50s and 60s was its heyday.
Well, that's when you want to go to a place, when it's kind of like a bit washed up.
Yeah, but I quite enjoyed it. It was good.
So the name of that particular town again was?
Mazatlan.
Mazatlan.
It's kind of like, it's very, in comparison to the rest of the sort of Mexican coastline that I saw, it's a bit sort of resorty, if I could use that word. The beaches that we went to, sort of for instance down on the Oaxacan coast, were pretty majestic and like the sort of the quintessential sort of Corona tagline from where you'd rather be, like on a deserted beach on your own, sitting under a palm tree, drinking a beer.
Yeah, because some of the areas are quite commercial and obviously geared to a lot of American tourism, because like Mexico to the United States is like Bali is to Australia.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
So it's very heavily marketed to those. And some of those areas like in Cancun and,
yeah.
you know, it's very, very built up and commercial. So you could be pretty much anywhere sometimes and it'd be hard to discern
Is Cancun in Oaxaca?
No, Cancun's on the Gulf.
That's on the Gulf?
Yeah, yeah.
And then Oaxaca is up...
Oaxaca is south of Mexico City on the western coast. I think Cancun's over on the Caribbean side.
Yeah, that's right.
So Oaxaca, is that where Zihuatanejo is?
Where who?
I know, I just love saying the words.
Wait, say that again.
Zihuatanejo.
There you go.
Once you wrap your tongue around the names of the Mexican cities, it's just so fun to say.
You could have said anything and we would never have known the difference.
Well, I think that I'm going to have to look it up now. I think that Zihuatanejo is in Oaxaca on the coast.
Okay.
And that's a very popular beach area.
This Joycast
Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're on the Escape Hour on Joy. You're with Tad and Stefan, and we are talking all things Mexico in the studio with our lovely guest, Hugh Wignall. Thanks again, Hugh. So we've been exploring some of the coastal areas on the West Coast. Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about what else you did while you were in Mexico, because you were there for 6 weeks.
Yeah, 6 weeks, and that wedding that we're talking about before was sort of towards the tail end, so it was kind of the preceding sort of 3 or 4 weeks that we just sort of spent, you know, sort of hopping on and off that sort of western coastline, and started sort of in Oaxaca and spent some time down on the Oaxacan coast at places. We actually spent a week in Oaxaca, which was it's beautiful. It's kind of a very sort of cultural part of Mexico. I think the Aztec Empire sort of originates from that sort of area. So Oaxaca itself is quite incredible in the way that, you know, you walk down the street and every single house is a different colour. And like we're talking like green and purple and yellow, and it's a super colourful part of Mexico. And it had like this old village kind of feel, like, you know, huge sort of piazzas and squares and amazing churches, and you're sort of just surrounded by the Oaxacan sort of mountains as well, which are also sort of pretty incredible. So in terms of like stuff to do, like we spent about a week in Oaxaca, and I was just sort of, you know, hopping around the place and going to the botanical gardens and doing all sorts of stuff like that. And then you can sort of make your way off into the hills for a day trip. And, you know, I went to a place called El Tul, which has like the world's thickest tree. We went up to... It's incredible. It's like 14 metres across. Like
What kind of tree is it?
Oh, God, you've stumped me. I really should
have... Maybe it's some kind of pine.
I think it is. Probably. I think it is probably a type of pine, yeah.
Yep. But okay, let's just go with that.
We'll run with that. We can look it up.
But, it was a great place to sort of just launch from and sort of go up into the hills, and we sort of spent another day out at, I'm going to pronounce this incorrectly, at Teotihuacan, which is basically where... They do believe that the Aztec Empire sort of originated, so it's kind of like the ruins up on top of the hill. It's where they sort of found that, you know, corn was first domesticated, you know, 10,000 years ago. So there's lots of history up there, and a really fascinating place to sort of go and check out. But Oaxaca itself is also, you know, the Mezcal capital of Mexico. So plenty of rooftops up there where you can sort of sit and just overlook the town and you know, enjoy a couple of mezcals.
Did you know that keeping cacti on top of your roof is a thing? You put them on the roof for good luck. Is that right, Tad?
It's good luck, yeah, definitely.
Or keep away the evil spirits?
Bit of both, I think. You know, it's just some of the traditional sort of thing. And I mean, you were just talking about some of the... like the corn and all that. And I mean, corn, chilies, and chocolate was introduced to the world by Mexico. So,
absolutely.
Imagine where we'd be without either of those three things.
Depressed.
Yeah.
Depressed, absolutely.
But it just goes to the, you know, the whole Aztec, I mean, the civilization that's, you know, centuries and centuries old. You know, it's just incredible the impact that it has. And sometimes I don't think it gets enough respect.
No.
We always hear about the Egyptians and, you know, things like that. But,
Well, that's right, and they made some incredible
pyramids.
Ziggurats. Pyramids, the steppy ones.
Yeah. Totally, yeah. And all sorts of things. They're such a proud people as well. Like their history, you know, it sort of dates back sort of 10,000 years. And we talk about, you know, corn and their sort of relationship with religion and the gods and the land. Like it's a fascinating place to sort of go and check out.
Yeah. One thing I always found really sort of crazy is how creepy and mean looking their gods are. You just see the engravings and it's like they're baring teeth and they're going to eat you and it's scary. It's scary.
Yeah.
That's all the mythology.
That's true, but they still got the scary sculptures.
Oh, yeah. And they kind of change over time as well. You can see some of the how they've kind of morphed into different sort of figures and things like that. It's quite fascinating.
Yeah.
It is. Like the Anthropological Museum in Mexico City, which is...
Did you go to that?
I did. Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, you did? I did.
Did you both go to it? Okay. I didn't get to it, so...
I would highly recommend it.
Yeah. I barely got into the Frida Kahlo Museum.
Now, weren't you almost banned?
Almost.
For what? Yeah.
Well, it wasn't my behaviour. It was someone else's behaviour. We'll talk about that later.
Oh, yes.
Were you getting fire at the front of the line? Because it does take a long time to get into that.
Yeah, I wasn't. Okay. My friend was, so yeah.
Right, yeah.
But, you were telling them it's going to be worth the wait. It'll be worth the wait. It'll be worth the wait.
Yeah, and it had a little photo permit sticker came into play as well.
Oh my goodness.
Or maybe not paying for one and getting one from someone else, which I didn't do, someone else did. So anyway, it's a whole other story.
Now, is the Diego Rivera Museum open right next door, or is that at a different place?
So the Frida Kahlo Museum is actually at her home.
Right.
So you actually go into her home, and I thought it was quite fascinating. You don't see a lot of her works. You see a lot of her husband's work, you know, because she really didn't paint that many pieces. And most of those pieces, I believe, are in Madonna's private collection.
Probably.
Yeah. But you do see, like, you know, where her paintbrushes are set up and the paints that were, I believe they were given to her by Roosevelt, actually, as a gift. They're in the exact positions as what they were. They have not been moved,
That's
which is quite so fascinating.
So spooky. Yep.
It is a bit spooky, but it's kind of cool.
Well, the interesting thing about Frida Kahlo, of course, is she was not Mexican herself.
No.
She's born of, I think, Spanish and Hungarian parents,
yeah.
I believe. And her get-up, her outfit, was actually not even, I mean, that was traditional.
It's traditional, yeah.
A Mexican costume, but it's not like people walked around Mexico City dressed like that.
No, she really sort of, I think, embraced the cultural aspect of Mexico in that regard, because you'd sort of go out to these sort of mountain hilly areas of Oaxaca and they were dressed exactly the way Frida Kahlo was back then. And it was, you know, very evident through her art as well. Like, she sort of really became a Mexican woman.
Yep. And interestingly enough, too, she spent a lot of time in the United States living, actually, with her husband. But as her life progressed, she had horrible, horrible back problems. So she was always wearing these, you know, like back braces and things like that. And that was actually the inspiration for, like, Jean-Paul Gaultier's, you know, designs and couture clothing, which is quite fascinating.
That
you would not want to have thought that something that was used for a medical purpose would have been sort of developed into some sort of high fashion thing.
Totally. And all the art sort of has that sort of aspect of pain as well.
Absolutely.
Because it was just the amount of, the immense pain that she was in.
Always. Yeah.
You can really feel it in the work.
Yep. Mm.
And also, I must say, I thought the Salma Hayek movie was really good.
Very good.
Loved that. I mean, aside from the fact that Salma Hayek is hot as.
Yeah.
I mean, she's so, anyway, if anyone wants to know more about Frida Kahlo, I would say that film is a really good one to check out.
Yeah.
We somehow jumped to Mexico City.
We did. Back to Oaxaca?
Let's go back to
Oaxaca. Well, after Oaxaca, we made our way down to a place called Mazunte on the Oaxacan coast. But I was speaking sort of off air before to these guys, and we sort of spoke about how the bus ride to Mazunte is just this torturous 8-hour nauseating mountain ascent and then descent. So we broke it up with a night in a place called San Jose del Pacifico, which we learnt on arrival is the magic mushroom capital of Mexico. So you sort of, you land in there and, like, you just sort of see there are, you know, adverts for mushrooms painted on buildings everywhere, and all these people just walking around clearly affected by magic mushrooms.
But why didn't they give them to you before you got on the bus? So it wasn't...
Would have been a great way to kill the time.
Yeah.
But it was a beautiful sort of mountain town, and it's, when I say a mountain town, I literally mean you'd sort of, we woke up and you'd be in the clouds, like, looking down the valleys, and it's that sort of almost, you feel like you're so high up in the sky that you're almost above the cloud line. It was just fascinating, incredible sort of experience to sort of wake up and sort of see that.
I stayed at a town called Taxco, which was just 1 hour, I think, out sort of south of Mexico City. And I went there because it's a jewellery town. It's a silver town.
Oh, yeah.
And I went there because I really wanted to buy a particular ring.
Yeah.
Which is a long story, which I won't go into, about my sister buying a ring in another country and where did it come from. Anyway, so I went to this town and it was absolutely adorable because it was super, super hilly with all of these tiny little cobblestone streets, and all the taxis were old VWs.
Wow.
And they would chugging up and down these little streets and up and down. And at nighttime, when we went on our margarita tasting tour, as you would, going from bar to bar, trying all the different, because of the village was sort of separated by all these little hills, it sort of looked like there were all these floating, the lights were all these floating little villages. Mm. It was just absolutely divine.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Well, so this town sounds absolutely beautiful. Can you say the name again?
San Jose del Pacifico, which kind of makes you sort of think that it is actually on the coastline. I think I was confused. I had no idea where we were going. I think my girlfriend was like, no, it's in the mountains. I'm like, are you sure? It says it's got Pacifico in it. I'm not too sure. But funnily enough, we went there we sort of just had this bizarre kind of like night or two sort of bus breakup. And it was, we purely just stopped there because we'd heard from other people that this bus was so
too much.
too much. Like it was too much that people would sort of have to take anti-nausea tablets, like, you know, 3 hours beforehand just to sort of get through it. So it was a nice way to break it up. And I, you know, funnily enough, speaking about sort of food, like completely off, we haven't spoken about food yet, but I remember going into this tavern in San Jose del Pacifico, and there was a really, you know, tall, quirky sort of guy, like, that was obviously sort of running the show. And, you know, I heard him sort of speak, and he sounded Italian. And of course, you look at the menu and it's an Italian menu. And I, to this day, have not had a better pasta than in the hills of Mexico. Had this amatriciana that was honestly, the maybe it was because I hadn't, you know, had anything other than tacos for about a week by that stage. I'm not too sure.
It's all right. Doesn't matter.
It's burnt in my memory and etched forever. Like this pasta we had that was cooked by this guy who came from Milan and had spent like 20 years up in that those particular hills just making pasta and cooking.
Amazing.
That is extraordinary.
Yeah.
We're going to do a special on our favourite food memories from travel. That's another one we should do.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now I heard you say before that you did an incredible hike.
Yeah. That all sort of came about from a book I read called Born to Run, and the book is written by an American guy, and it's without sort of giving too much away, it's about a essentially an ultra marathon race that
you can tell. I'm not going to read the story.
Okay, all right.
About an ultra marathon.
There might be other people listening. Yeah, maybe. Will want to read the story.
It's not about you, Fiona.
essentially, it's about a tribe of indigenous Mexicans called the Tarahumara that live in the caves up in the Copper Canyons, which is quite sort of north in terms of the country. Like we're well away from the Oaxaca now. Like we're right up north, and historically, these indigenous Mexicans like would have like a harvest moon, and they get really, really drunk on corn beer or wine. I'm not too sure. Yeah. And then they would go out running the next day, but they would run for 2 days straight. And when you're in the canyon, we're talking about like, you know, 45 degree vertical sort of ascents, and like they were just widely regarded now as some of the best ultra marathon runners in the world because you know, they've just been doing it for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so I read this book and I sort of found the whole sort of story fascinating, and thank God my girlfriend did too, because it was, you know, she's like, we should go and check this out. And I'm like, I didn't think that was a possibility or on the cards. And we went and had this amazing sort of 3 or 4 days up in a place called Creel, which is kind of, it's super frontier sort of territory. Like you're all of a sudden around a lot of people that are wearing sort of double denim cowboy hats and boots and belt buckles, and you kind of feel like you're in the Wild West.
Yeah.
And it's almost like Canada in the way that like it's really rocky, lots of trees, like not the sort of landscape or environment you'd sort of typically associate with a place like Mexico. And we had sort of a day or two up in Creel, and then you can go down into the canyons, and the canyon that we sort of went down into was the Batopilas Canyon. It was about a sort of 3 or 4 hour drive, and it was an amazing sort of place because we were like maybe sort of 3 or 4, you know, white people out of the entire town. So like all the eyes were on us, and we sort of had 2 or 3 days of the most amazing hiking I've ever done in my life.
That does sound incredible. I'm a big hiking fan, and it would be beautiful. It's always beautiful to get out in the wilderness in another country.
Absolutely.
Joy 94.9 has a huge range of programs available for podcast. In fact, Joy is one of the largest podcasting communities on community radio. If you haven't checked out our podcasting service, you're missing out. Visit joy.org.au, click on the podcast tab, and you'll find a list of Joy programs regularly sharing the best interviews, news and reviews. There's tens of thousands of hours for you to enjoy, so check it out now, joy.org.au.
We're here with Hugh Wignall, and we're talking all about Mexico, and we're hopping around Mexico like nobody's business.
But that's good, though.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah,
it is. And you did, I mean, it's a big country, so you covered quite a lot of territory.
We did, and
Copper Canyon, right?
Copper Canyon, yeah, exactly. Yep. So, like, it was, you know, we certainly hopped around, but up in the canyons, like, you can bus around Mexico, and we did that a little bit, as mentioned before, but, like, when you don't really feel like sitting on a nauseating eight-hour bus, it's pretty easy to fly everywhere as well, so.
Mm. Are the buses comfortable, or are they old style? You know what I mean? Because a lot of people have a certain vision of what traveling within Mexico would be like.
Here's a vision for you.
Okay.
So that particular bus ride from Oaxaca down to the Muzunte, town of Muzunte, I was sitting in the back of a minivan and I was made to sit with, it was probably about 150 bread rolls on my lap with my bag next to me, and it was literally, you know, sort of 35 degrees, and I looked at this bread after I'd been sort of sitting next to it for 4 hours going, God, I hope they don't feed this to anyone.
Oh, no.
So when you sort of take, maybe that was sort of a bit of a one-off, I'm not too sure, but like when you're getting transported, there is other stuff getting transported. Okay. And so like you just have to sort of sit there and roll with it. And I'm sort of quite tall, and I think I don't sort of really, I have sometimes trouble with door frames in Australia, let alone Mexico. So you just, you know, you make do with what you can, but yeah.
You roll with it.
Yes, I don't remember any unpleasant bus trips while I was travelling Mexico.
Yep.
But they were fairly short, the ones I went on.
Yeah. I think, yeah, as long as there's no chickens and things like that, you're okay.
Yeah. No, I could never do that at all.
The trains the trains are amazing in Mexico. Good, yeah. They're incredible. Yep. And like the we did this train ride getting sort of up into the Copper Canyons again from a town called Los Mochis, which we sort of really only had basically one very late night there, and actually had one of the nicest street food meals I can remember of the trip. But we got the train from Los Mochis up to Creel, which is a 10-hour train ride, and the train does not go faster than 30 kilometres an hour, and just sort of winds its way up really slowly, but it's just exceptionally beautiful. And I remember that being, you know, super comfortable. We just kicked back and put our feet up and watched the world go by for 10 hours. It was incredible.
Okay, cool.
Fascinating.
You could have made your own slow train journey TV show.
Could have.
And sold it to SBS.
Yes.
If you knew that was going to be a thing.
Well, now I do. But yeah, like it's, I don't know, getting around Mexico, we sort of found to be quite easy. And even sort of, you know, hopping around in cities, like, you know, there are Ubers, there are taxis. It's recommended that you take Ubers in some places like Mexico City. Yeah. But like I remember sort of cruising around Mexico City on a electric scooter on Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah.
You basically just sort of, you download the app and you sort of, you unlock it, and then you've got this, you know, electric scooter for the next 8 hours. And we had a...
That's pretty cool.
It's an amazing way to get around. Yeah. And like, I don't think we'd normally do it, but because it was Christmas and because Mexico is, you know, largely sort of Catholic, it was very quiet.
Yeah.
And we were just cruising the streets of Roma and La Condesa on these scooters, like basically sort of going from bar to restaurant and all sort of stuff and having a great time.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun, doesn't it?
Yeah, and so with your travels going up to the canyon and all that, I mean, you know, again, a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions about security in Mexico, and you hear stories even just about Mexico City, but speaking about more, you know, remote places where, like, you travel to, I mean, how did you fare with that, and what were your impressions of that?
I don't know, it's funny, because I think when you do all your research before you go on the trip, and I, you know, as I sort of said off air before, like, we, you know, I remember reading The Lonely Planet, and, you know, the section that they sort of, you know, detail about Batopilas, I'm pretty sure it says, you know, it's not uncommon for, you know, to see a 19-year-old male walking down the street with a handgun.
Yeah.
And so we were, you know, a little bit sort of tetchy about, you know, whether to go in the first place or not, but, you know, we decided to sort of run with it. And the whole time we were down there, like, it was super safe. You know, there are certain sort of things that, you know, you listen to when they sort of tell you, like, don't be anywhere near the river after dark and that sort of thing. And sometimes that's out of your control, as we sort of found out the hard way. But, you know, the whole time in Mexico in general, like, I've felt probably more unsafe in places like London or New York. You know, Mexico, they're lovely people. They're really warm. Yeah. They want to help you. Everyone's just, you know, we didn't find anyone to be... difficult at all.
But it's like, well, we always say that on the show when we're talking about destinations, you have to be street smart, but no matter where you are. I mean, you don't want to be down by the river and the Yarra River, it's certain areas, you know.
Totally,
dark,
exactly.
You know? I mean, so I think, sometimes these guidebooks and all that, they're there and that's great and you should listen to them and be aware, but don't let it stop you.
No, not at all. And like, you know, I think some of the best parts of that trip were, you know, in those really, really rural and remote areas, because it's just, you know, it's a fascinating sort of lifestyle that you never sort of really get to experience or see, and you only get to see it if you actually get out there.
Yeah, that's good. And the food, you mentioned the street food, that was one of the most amazing meals you had. What was that?
That was like that was actually just a stock standard sort of taqueria, but we had this weird sort of, you know, we didn't sort of think about doing anything in this town called Los Mochis, because we got in there about sort of 7 o'clock at night, and even the guy who's who was looking after Airbnb is like, you probably shouldn't go out too far, because it's like, right, that was we're in a neighborhood that wasn't really conducive to tourism. But we saw there was a little place around the corner, and we sort of sat in there, and it was kind of like, you know, sitting in someone's garage, but like there were these trestle tables everywhere, yeah, and the place was absolutely packed, yeah, and we just had this absolute knockout sort of taco dinner, and like, you know, things like Aztec soup and all sorts, yeah, of stuff, like so beautiful rich tomato soup, and the street food in Mexico, probably, you know, I think everyone's quite across how, mm-hmm, sort of amazing it is. I remember even this morning I was frantically trying to remember, like, you know, what we're eating, and because everything starts with tea, like, you know, tostadas, tortas, tailitas, tacos, you name it. I'm just like, what actually went into that? Like, it's confusing, but the food's amazing. And, you know, it's you know, I think in Australia, like, when you sort of think about a taco, it's like, right, well, let's put eight things in it. Whereas over there, mm-hmm, it's two or three things, yeah, and they just do it, mm-hmm, really well, yep, and they've been cooking it for 10 hours and it's delicious. And I'm a massive ice cream fan. You can go to a heladeria, oh, yeah, and you can have literally any flavour of ice cream you want. Yep. Like, you walk into one, there'd be like 80 different flavours. So it's fascinating.
That's good. And of course, the guacamole is pretty good.
The guacamole, that, yeah, was literally a daily occurrence for, yeah, me and my girlfriend, because they just do it so well, and it, you know, the best avocados in the world. And it kind of wasn't really a morning in Mexico without us sort of waking up and going and having a guacamole.
Oh, that sounds amazing. So good, it doesn't does. It?
Yeah.
And it sounds quite easy for vegetarian as well, or not really?
No.
I wouldn't think it is actually good for vegetarians.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I travelled with a vegetarian. Yeah. I'm a pescatarian, yeah, and I travelled with a vegetarian when I was there, and I thought I would be empathetic and I would not eat any seafood, which was almost near impossible, because, yeah, seafood was delicious, mm, particularly when you're on the coast.
Yeah.
And I think that all their beans are cooked in lard.
So
you really can't get away from it. You sort of have to just accept the fact. And I remember going into a couple of restaurants and asking what here does not have meat in it, and they, yep, were like, ensalada. So there was a lot of salad and a lot of guacamole that,
yeah,
was eaten.
Yeah.
And then I reminded my friend that the beans were probably cooked in lard.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he had to make the decision to consume it or starve, basically. Now, that might change, but from my experience, yeah, it's not a great place to go if you're a vegetarian.
Yeah,
I'd agree with that. There are some places that we went to. There was the town of Muzunte, it's quite attractive for a lot of sort of tourists from, yeah, you know, age 18 to 40, and a lot of them that are travelling there are sort of there to do yoga retreats, and a lot of them that do travel there are sort of vegetarian or pescatarian. So there are options there, because based on the tourists that are going there, but I think, yeah, largely Mexico is quite tricky for a vegetarian.
So go where the Westerners go if you want to get, yeah, vegetarian
only to
food.
Eat and then get off the beaten track again.
Yeah, and then exactly.
Yeah, that's right. What about drinks? Anything that you remember that were pretty amazing, or
yeah,
just
I remember our first night in Mexico City, and we sort of we stayed, funnily enough, opposite a biker bar, and this biker bar was raucous, and it was super loud, and, yeah, it just got to the point where we thought, well, if we can't beat them, we're just gonna have to join them. And so we walked over there and pretty quickly realised that you weren't supposed to walk up to the bar, because I walked up to the bar to order sort of two drinks, and I got a few really funny looks.
Right.
I'm thinking that my girlfriend's outside in a biker bar and I should probably get back to her. I remember having, you know, beers that were sort of, the rims were coated in sort of chili, and in Oaxaca, it's the mezcal capital. So like finding myself drinking a lot of little shots of, you know, clear alcohol that was delicious. And a lot of people sort of think that, you know, tequila is the national drink of Mexico, but by and large, it's actually mezcal.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah,
kind of what they all sort of prefer to drink, yeah, and that's what they would sort of consider their sort of national drink as well. But, yeah, and then, you know, we think we know how to make a margarita over, yeah, here, and then you go over there and you just sort of...
Amazing.
It's just, yeah, it's astonishing.
Yeah, it's a whole other level.
Yeah.
Done right.
Totally. And it lends itself, you know, to afternoon drinking on the beach, yeah, and that sort of stuff, and people will come up to you while you're on the beach and they'll say, would you like a margarita? And you're like, who am I to say not?
That's right.
It'd be rude.
Yeah, absolutely. I would be drinking margaritas on the beach for sure.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And beers.
In moderation.
Yeah. In moderation.
Well, yeah. You're getting in a car and driving, of course.
Yeah, so you're on holidays.
Yes. What's the difference between tequila and mezcal, though?
I think mezcal is made from a particular type of...
agave?
Yes, and then tequila is made from...
another type of agave.
Correct.
Thank you.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to The Escape Hour that's all about Mexico today with Hugh Wignall. Now, we were talking about...
We're talking about drinks.
We're talking about drinks. Yeah. And the difference, wanted to know the difference between tequila and mezcal. And I think the difference is mostly that tequila needs to be made in a certain place.
In the region of tequila
in Mexico with 50% blue agave.
Yes. And then the other is just the normal agave. Can be made anywhere.
They sound as territorial as champagne.
A bit like champagne and Prosecco. Prosecco, that we might lose the Australian Prosecco soon.
Yes.
And feta cheese, apparently.
And feta cheese
as well.
And
I can't say anything.
Yeah. I would think brie and camembert, because really, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
It's got nothing to do with the real stuff.
Yeah. Well, but oops.
That's my opinion as
not necessarily the opinion of a French person. Well, yeah, you can say that. Yeah, it's true.
Okay. But let's go back to Mexico. I'm quite interested. You went to the remote region in the north.
Yep.
And you did a walk there.
Yeah. I should have used the cough button. We spent 2 days. There's basically three towns that you can sort of, you know, spend time in that sort of particular region. There's Creel, which is kind of like where you sort of divert off to a place called Urique, into the Urique Canyon, or you can go off into Batapias, into the Batapias Canyon. Just to give you an idea as well, these canyons are on par with the Grand Canyon. Like, they're huge, and they go for, you know, 50 to 100 kilometres, and they're quite impressive to sort of look at. But we sort of ended up picking Batapias because it was a bit more sort of remote, and we thought, well, bugger it, if we're here, we'll let's go somewhere, you know, super intrepid.
And super intrepid. It should be a new company name.
Yeah.
We stayed in the only one of two hotels in town, and it was quite a small sort of town against this sort of beautiful river in the bottom of the canyon. It takes like 3 or 4 hours driving just to get down into the bottom of the canyon. And we asked the hotelier if he could organise someone to take us on a hike, and sure enough, we met Umberto the next day.
Yeah.
And Umberto didn't seem like the likely character to be sort of, you know, hiking. Like, he was, you know, 6'5" and had a beer barrel on his belly, and was walking around in these Huarache sandals, which are truck tire sandals. So he had this cowboy hat on, and he met us at the front door at 8 o'clock in the morning with a machete that was the same length as his leg, and off we went. Like, and we were told it was only going to be a 6 hour sort of hike, and we're like, that's brilliant, up to the top of the ridge of the canyon and then back down. But I think we sort of got a bit off track, and the whole thing sort of took 10 hours, but it was phenomenal. It was one of the most incredible sort of hikes I've ever been on in my life, and I reckon probably that I'll ever get to do. Yeah. But, you know, sort of talking bit before about sort of feeling safe, you know, having someone like Umberto is super necessary out there. You can't sort of go out there and just do that sort of walk on your own. And a lot of it was him sort of walking, you know, up to the cottage, you know, that a farmer lived in, to sort of ask if it was okay if we sort of moved through it and that sort of thing. But it sort of culminated in this beautiful lunch that he'd had in his bag the whole time, and sort of walked our lunch up, and, you know, we sort of sat on this top ridge and just basically said nothing and took it all in for half an hour.
That's cool.
It was brilliant. We had, like, you know, 3 or 4 sort of, what were they? They were kind of like taco sort of wraps, and funnily enough, as a lot of people in Mexico do, they love Coca-Cola more than water.
Right.
So he'd only brought, you know, 4 or 5 bottles of Coca-Cola with him, but only 1 bottle of water. So, like, we were trying to figure out how we're going to sort of, you know, stay hydrated the whole way down. And even on the way down, like, it was a big hike, and it was pretty it was pretty sort of tiring. So by the end of it, I think, you know, there were a couple of times where all three of us fell on our backsides sliding down, right, you know, the you know, sort of certain parts, because it did get a little bit sort of sketchy. And, like, when you're in the canyon, you know, once that sort of sun goes up and over you, it's almost like the sun sets way earlier,
right,
because you're down in the bottom of that canyon. And sure enough, we found ourselves next to the river at 6 p.m., which is what we were specifically told not to do. So at one point, I put my girlfriend in between me and Umberto, and I said, you keep your hand on his belt and I'll keep my hand on your shoulder. And if you hear anything, you know, hold tight. And and you could sort of, you heard, like, dogs barking and people whistling and all that sort of stuff. And for about the last hour, I think we were mildly terrified. And then eventually we sort of came up into town, and I've never been so happy to sort of, like, see a hotel room. Yeah, it was, we got away with it. But yeah, it was nonetheless probably, you know, one of the most beautiful parts of the world I've ever been.
That's cool. Do you speak Spanish? Or
well, funnily enough, no. But it was. I thought it'd be a good idea to do some Spanish lessons before we went, just so it would sort of help us, you know, sort of getting around. So we did that for 6 weeks. We did a little travel course in Collingwood, and it was, you know, it was a great way to get excited about the trip, but it was also a great way just to sort of, you know, learn a few sort of bits and pieces. Yep. Mexicans speak incredibly fast, and you know, it's just one of those sort of things. Like, you at least I knew how to say train. At least I knew how to say left and right, and that's
so it's helpful to do that ahead.
Yeah, absolutely, totally. And I think they also kind of respect someone that's taken the effort to sort of try and sort of speak their language and understand it, because they're much more likely to, you know, offer advice or help you out if you can at least demonstrate that you're sort of trying to converse in their language.
And did a lot of people in the remote areas, did they speak English as well, or was it?
It was funny because there were some that spoke amazing English, and I'm not too sure whether that was because they lived in other parts where there were a lot of English speakers. But it sort of seemed like in Mexico you either could or you couldn't,
right?
You know, and there are a few people that sort of, you know, had sort of an idea of how to speak English, but there are a lot of times where I'd be sort of standing at a bar, you know, they'd be looking at me and I'd be looking at them, and I'd have to sort of point to things like trying to sort of mime a martini glass and that sort of stuff. But We got there in the end. Yeah.
That's part of the fun.
There was no sort of part where it was difficult.
Yeah,
really.
And you know, if you know you're going to be spending time in more rural areas, it's always beneficial to learn the language because you won't have the numbers of people in the capital cities.
Absolutely.
Well, we've had some great feedback from a listener, Linda, who is actually from Mexico City.
Oh,
and
cool.
The first thing Linda wanted to let me know was that she was really happy we were talking about Mexico, and because it's a fabulous place, as we all know, and it's not the scary place that's made out by quite a lot of other people.
That's right.
And, you know, there was only one area she wanted to correct us on, and that was that the Aztecs are not from Oaxaca.
Oops.
They're the Olmecas are from the Oaxaca, and that each area in Mexico has its own different cultural group.
Oh, okay. That's fascinating.
So that is fascinating. And what the other thing that we looked up is, of course, in the break, is the difference between mezcal and tequila.
Yeah.
And all tequilas are mezcal, but only mezcal made in tequila is tequila in the tequila region.
Right.
So think of it as champagne.
Yes.
So that is the difference. And tequila can only be made with blue agave, whereas mezcal can be made anywhere in the world.
Right.
With blue and green agave.
Cool.
Linda, thank you so much for your feedback, and thanks for listening, and we all love Mexico.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
You're on the Escape Hour on Joy, in case you hadn't guessed. And for the last 55 minutes, we've been discussing Mexico with Hugh Wignall, who has just returned from a trip there and telling us some fantastic stories, not just about Mexico City, but far-flung beaches and mountains and rivers and all over the place. And it's been brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.
We encourage everyone to go and check out Mexico. Yeah. Mexico City, I was there during the Mexican Independence Day on the 16th of September. Yeah. And that was an extraordinary experience because the president of Mexico stands out on a balcony in the central square in Mexico, rings the bell and says really loudly, Viva Mexico, and everyone goes completely insane. And it was fantastic. But I didn't know when I went to Mexico City that was actually going to happen.
That was a fun little
surprise
thing. Surprise, yeah.
It was
good.
A fantastic surprise.
It's the best thing about travel. Things
Isn't
that you don't
it?
Expect.
Yeah.
Good things you don't expect.
And they have excellent public transport, of course, in Mexico City.
They do.
And
they
have more museums per capita than any other city in the world.
And good food and good people.
And great
food. What more could you ask for?
And the smog isn't really that bad. I didn't notice it. You see it as you fly in, but once you're there, I didn't notice it.
No, not at all. It was good. Not even when I went to, Puerto Vallarta, and, you know, it was just very pristine. It was really amazing. I'd never noticed it at all.
In general, I kind of remember, you know, my time in Mexico, it was clean. It was like they look up, they're proud of their cities and they're proud of their beaches and they're you know, they really do sort of make sure that those places are for the people.
Yeah.
And when I was staying in Troncones, there were giant turtles that would come on the beach at night and lay their eggs. I mean, not like hundreds of them, but, you know, a few.
Yeah.
And I was absolutely gobsmacked.
Yeah.
I'd had a few drinks at this point and I was like, oh my God, there's a giant turtle climbing up on the beach. it was quite a surprise.
There's a lot of things like that we you know, there's a lot of misconceptions about Mexico, and you know, there's a lot of that the nature side of Mexico that we never really get the opportunity to be exposed to unless you actually go there and take the time and do that. It's you know, it seems like it's a faraway place to get to, but more and more flights are being you know, organized, and the airlines are starting to go to Mexico because it's a great place to go.
Absolutely. And that's how I, you know, I think I'll always remember it, is the country where you could literally go and do anything you want.
Yeah.
You could go to the, sit on a private beach that there was no one there. You could go up into the desert. You could go and have an amazing cocktail in downtown sort of Mexico City, or you could literally do anything, and like an hour away on a flight, and it's completely different.
Yeah. There's something for everyone.
Yeah.
Really.
I don't think they have any ski slopes.
Probably and not.
It is LGBTIQ friendly as well, so there's so that's really a bonus
for the
destination.
Good.
Yeah. So,
yep. No point.
Now, you know, we have a question.
Go for it.
You look a little bit nervous.
Well, only because you didn't ask it before.
Okay. So, do you roll or do you fold?
I roll.
Oh.
You had to think about that, though.
Well,
you're like, what do we?
We're talking about packing.
Yeah.
Ah. Oh. I certainly fold then.
Oh, there you go. That's a good one. Well, Hugh, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
So, does your girlfriend roll or fold?
She'd be a folder as well.
She'd be a folder. You're a bifold family.
Yes, that's true. That is true.
That's great.
That sounds really good. Well, we certainly appreciate you coming in.
Thanks for coming in.
No, thank you for having me.
You have to come back.
We can do one on Sri Lanka next year.
Oh, you got okay, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we have someone coming in to talk about Sri Lanka on the 27th, but next year we have multiple people coming in to talk about different, because, you know, but everyone has different experiences.
Yeah, it's always very different.
Yeah.
Which is good.
So we have Sri Lanka coming up, and we have a couple of other things that we're not quite sure.
But that's all right.
They'll be amazing no matter what.
They will be.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They will be amazing.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.